It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell. And Cecil Harvell, of course, of Harvell and Collins. And Wes Collins, likewise, Harvell and Collins. And as always, I'd like to remind you about ways to reach out to them. And you can do so by giving them a call, 252 area code, of course, 726-9050, 726-9050, or via email. And you can reach out to them at their website at harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com. And with that, good afternoon, Cecil.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. And welcome to the day after Labor Day.
Right. And to you, Wes, good afternoon to you as well.
Yes, sir, Lockwood.
I hope you enjoyed their Labor Day weekend.
Yep.
Yes.
So,
nice so Lockwood, Wes and I are going to try to explain a little bit, demystify, if you will, the concept of title insurance. Mm-hmm. And title insurance is a type of insurance that would insure, if you will, mm-hmm. the title to our real property. And in the state of North Carolina, there's real property, which is known as land, and then personal property, which is kind of everything else. So when we use the term real property, we're referring to land and any improvement to the land, which would include the house, the fences, the pools, the garages, things of that nature. All of that would be under the category of real property. Okay. And Lockwood, as you well know, this all begins when someone, or usually begins when someone goes to buy property. And they enter into an offer to purchase and contract with a seller. And then the law is that the buyer, caveat emptor is the phrase, the buyer beware. The buyer has the obligation to research, investigate, and if you will, determine whether or not this property, for any number of reasons, is going to meet their satisfaction as the buyer. And they're given a due diligence period to do these kinds of things. One of the things that any buyer is advised to do, because again, it's the buyer's responsibility under the doctrine of caveat emptor, the buyer is recommended that the buyer secure a title search. And so the buyer, through their lawyer, in some states it's through a title agency, if you will, but in our state it's done mostly by lawyers or a law office, they go to the Register of Deeds in the county where the real property is located, and they conduct a title search, Lockwood. And a title search basically has two parts to it. One is the owner's search to see who the various owners of the property have been, Lockwood. For instance, you know, the Jones family, then the Smith family, then the Collins family, mm-hmm. finally the Harvell family. Okay, that would be, if you will, the owner search, giving each of us the owners of the various properties and the years that they owned the property. Mm-hmm. Now you follow that so far, don't you, Lockwood?
Right. And
then during these years that the say the Joneses owned the property, they owned it maybe for 10 years before they gave it to the Smiths, who owned it for an additional 10 years. During that 10-year period, we have to see, well, did Mr. Jones deed the property out or deed any easements or right-of-ways or mortgages or quitclaim deeds? What did he do with the property while he owned it for that 10-year period? And what we hope to find is that he did nothing, okay? Right. He owned the property, might have a mortgage on it, but other than a deed of trust, which will be paid off at the closing, it's a nice, clean title for those 10 years. Mm-hmm. And then we move to the next owner, Mr. Smith, and he owned the property for 10 years, and we do the same thing. Now, title insurance, the lawyers then present an opinion, if you will, as to the title on the property, and they show this information that I've just explained to you, Lockwood, to a title insurance company. Mm-hmm. And when I say an insurance company, I mean just that, Lockwood, just like Travelers, State Farm, Farm Bureau, you know, good old insurance. Here we go with the insurance industry.
Right.
And, of course, in the area of title insurance, there are very reputable title insurance companies. Some that come to mind are Chicago Title, right. Investors Title. These are some of the big ones, but there are quite a few of them, Lockwood. And after this information is submitted to the title insurance company, they submit a policy that will cover the title to that property. And the reason for that is that when I spoke of these deeds that we were looking for during the title search, suppose one of those deeds, and this goes into Mr. Collins' area of practice, suppose one of those deeds was obtained by duress, mm-hmm. or suppose it is not the signature of the purported Ooh. Person. Suppose they were incompetent at the time that they signed the deed. Suppose that the property wasn't titled in their name, but was titled in a trust, which is one of the cases that we spoke about a week or so ago. All of these kinds of things could exist in the title search, and yet the very competent title searcher, Lockwood, in looking at the signature, which is under notary, would not know that at the time that right. signature was under duress or was at a time that the person was frail and incompetent or was done at a time under circumstances of fraud. And so these are kind of some hidden defects that exist in the title that a title company, the title insurance company, would say, yes, we agree, this is unfortunate, that even though you had a competent title search performed and even though your title search is accurate in every way, the bottom line is that one of the deeds in the chain of title was obtained under circumstances that make the title defective. And so they then, as does any insurance company, attempt to make the party whole again. That is basically title insurance in a nutshell. There's a lot more to it than that, obviously, but that's kind of how it evolves.
Real quick question for you, Cecil. And you said this is an area of interest for Wes Collins with us, with Harvell and Collins as well. Cecil, in the process of handing over this documentation to the title insurance company, does the title insurance company itself review any of these records, or is it a matter of assumption that the lawyer has taken care of all of these details?
No, the insurance company reviews
okay.
the information that the lawyer submits. Absolutely. A part of the, if you will, the practical side of things is that many times properties, particularly, you know, known properties such as, you know, Brandywine, Spooner's
right.
Creek,
right.
Any condominium at the beach, Dunescape, Tar Landing, the list is endless, as we know. There would be, if you will, Lockwood, prior title searches on these particular
okay.
properties.
Yeah, that was the question I was going to ask. If the fact that there had been prior title insurance on the company, on that property, does that facilitate the transition to the new owner and obviously the new insurer?
It does.
Okay.
It does. And that would be a decision that's made by the title insurance company as
okay.
to whether or not they're willing to accept the prior title insurance and the information that was in the prior policy. Again, this is a matter, Lockwood, of the insurance industry. You know, everything is, you know, a risk analysis in mm-hmm. the insurance industry. We're in hurricane season right now, and our premiums are based on, well, what is the risk that we in eastern North Carolina might suffer a
right.
hurricane?
Right.
And the premium is adjusted as a result of that. So, again, we are on the cusp here in the auspices, if you will, of the insurance industry. And so they would make that decision. Well, we have lots of prior policies there, you know, in Spooner's Creek.
Right.
And so therefore, we're going to accept the prior policies
gotcha.
That exist as to that subdivision, as to those properties, and we will insure based on that.
Okay, before we're going to go to a quick break here in a moment, but before I do, I have one other quick question for you, Cecil, and then a bunch of other questions that came up related to encumbrances. But the issue of surveys, obviously, I'm assuming the title insurance wants to see a survey. And of course, I know there have been instances where surveyors have not agreed on property lines from time to time. How important is that in this title insurance effort?
Title insurance companies, when they're reviewing the opinion of title and the information that's provided relative to the closing or the the refinance or the purchase, to determine whether there's whether they're going to issue a title insurance policy, they're going to look at all the information, and if they may require a survey, in many cases they would, and if there's a discrepancy in a survey or if there's an encroachment, like there's a fence that goes across the line, something like that, or even if there's something within the setback, let's say there's a well that's dug that's within the setback in the, let's say, subdivision or some type of dispute with regard to that, well, the insurance company is probably not going to say, well, we're not going to issue the policy, but what they'll say is we'll issue the policy, but we're going to include an exception for survey matters.
Okay.
So we're not going to insure survey matters, so that let's say that your neighbor comes along in 2 years or a year, whenever it may be, after the closing and says, hey, your fence is over on my property.
Right.
And then there's a dispute over it, and a lawsuit gets filed, or there's some, like I said, legal dispute with regard to it, and then it's reported to your title insurance, then if there is no coverage for survey matters, then they don't have to provide a defense to you.
Okay.
They don't have to provide an attorney to you. They don't have to be involved in it.
All right.
So it's just typical underwriting. They're just looking at all of the information, and that would be a tight situation where they would accept survey matters.
That's Wes Collins of Harvell & Collins. We were talking earlier, of course, with Cecil Harvell here on Let's Talk Legal. I think this is an important story about title insurance and, of course, property control as well. This is Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And with that, Wes, you were talking, well, Cecil was leaning into the fact that there are obviously disputes that you have dealt with in these issues of title insurance and, of course, real property. And, of course, the real property, as Cecil mentioned a few moments ago, includes the home as well. I have one quick question, we can probably get to it in a few minutes, but the topic of encumbrances on property, is that also noted in the title search? And when I say encumbrances, the fact that a loan that a piece of property is underwriting a loan, that sort of thing, is that part of the research that's done for both the purchase and the caveat emptor, the responsibility of the buyer? Is that
sure.
Is that part of the process? Do you seek out any undisclosed encumbrances is a description I have.
Absolutely. The closing attorney, okay, so the buyer is going to identify who they want to close the transaction for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the closing attorney. As a side note, the closing attorney sometimes represents both sides, meaning we'll prepare the seller documents like the deed and some tax-related forms. And so he's on both sides of the transaction. That's one of the few areas in the law where the rules of professional conduct will allow a particular lawyer, just one lawyer, to represent both sides in a closing, because it's not adversarial in any way whatsoever. So that's a side note. But so the closing attorney will do the title search, and when he or she does the title search, then they're going to be able to get this clear picture, as Cecil described, regarding the chain of title.
Mm-hmm.
And the chain of title doesn't just limit itself to who owned it when, and when did they transfer it, when was there a sale, previous deeds. It also looks at any outstanding encumbrances, such as a deed of trust which a deed of trust is, you know, kind of in layman's terms, the document securing the property as collateral for a mortgage. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like also referred to that, look, there's a mortgage on the property.
Right.
Just using, you know, kind of slang with regard, not really slang, but not calling it the legal term of a deed of trust. It's a mortgage.
Right.
So there could be, you know, a first mortgage to one bank. There could be a equity line, deed of trust, where someone took out a second mortgage mm-hmm. on the property. When I say someone, it's probably the current owner. And so when the closing takes place, then the closing attorney wants to make sure that the buyer of the property gets free and clear title, of course. They don't want to take the property subject to someone else's loan. So the closing attorney's office or the closing attorney will go and contact the holder of the note, okay? Mm-hmm. Whoever, let's say if it's, you know, First Citizens has the deed of trust, then you just contact First Citizens and get the payoff. So when the money comes in to purchase the property and the closing takes place, well, some of that money will go, instead of to the seller, it will go to First Citizens to pay off that deed of trust so the property's free and clear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so, yes, that would be a big no-no if the closing attorney missed one of these encumbrances, missed a mortgage, missed a deed of trust. And that would be the type of thing, certainly, where let's say that the buyer buys the property, you know, maybe gets their own mortgage, you know, and everything is fine, and then gets a foreclosure notice,
right?
That their property is being foreclosed on months later because there's a deed of trust on the property that hasn't been paid off, and somebody whoever holds the note hasn't been paying the mortgage payment each month. That would be presumably since the closing. Well, that would be the type of thing that the buyer would say, okay, what happened here? And you contact, you know, for example, if that client came to me, then the first place we would look would be title insurance.
Okay.
We would want to bring in title insurance because title insurance would cover that. They would at least provide an attorney and most likely would cover the payoff on that. And then that would certainly be the type of case where if the closing attorney missed a deed of trust, and that's why we're in this mess, then there would be a subrogation claim there, not to make this too complicated, but maybe a subrogation claim where the title insurance would pay the claim most likely, but then seek recovery from the attorney's liability carrier.
Okay.
Because the attorney messed up. Okay.
So that's a classic title insurance
purpose
debacle claim, uh-huh. if you will. But it can work both ways. It can be that it was, you know, quote, missed, if you will, by the title searcher, which I might add is very rare. But more than likely, or possibly, it just wasn't properly indexed.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't recorded. There are all sorts, you know, the names were inappropriate. In other words, the perfection of the mortgage on the property for the title searcher was not loud and clear, mm-hmm. if you will. And so the buyer, the innocent buyer, the bona fide purchaser, buys the property and then, of course, is in this predicament. And that would be a classic title insurance claim. Title insurance, I think, so many times is about these hidden, unknown, kind of inadvertent things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always that way, but sometimes it is that way. It's rare, just so our listeners hear, for any law, any closing lawyer to quote, miss a deed of trust, because the rule of thumb is that, you know, that's unusual, let's face it, Lockwood, for, let's say, it's wonderful when people don't have a mortgage, but less statistically, most people do,
right.
Or even maybe an equity line. And so when you have a closing and there is no mortgage, there is no equity line, mm-hmm. that really is a red flag to the staff at the law office right. to just confirm with the seller, well, Mr. Jones, I see that you have, you know, no mortgage on your property. You have no equity line. And then Mr. Jones would say, oh, yes, that's correct. Now, you can't trust Mr. Jones all the time as a lawyer, but right. I'm just saying that that does bring up kind of the conversation, because many times the rule would be that there would be, after the deed into Mr. Jones, there would be a deed out for, you know, a mortgage or an equity line. But title insurance is a very valuable thing for these kinds of hidden defects that exist. And the case that Wes is so involved in now, as we talked about, concerns the fact that the title to the property was actually in a trust, mm-hmm. but the fraudster, if you will, confronted the owner of the property and had her deed the property out in her individual name. And so we, of course, immediately, what any good lawyers will do is immediately contact the title insurance mm-hmm. and say, we want you to be aware that this has happened. There is now this cloud, if you will, as to the clarity of the title on this property, it being titled in the name of a trust, but yet a deed out in the name of the individual, not the trustee. What do you suggest, or what do you concur with us as to we need to have Mr. Collins file a lawsuit and get this cloud removed? And so they absolutely concurred with us. They're very supportive title insurance companies. They have great lawyers that work for them, and they usually have been a career lawyer in the area of real property law. They know lots and lots about different things concerning real property, and they are a wealth of information and assistance for Wes and myself. But we are now in the middle of a lawsuit whereby we are clearing the title to this property due to this, you know, fraudulent deed. And we do, hand in hand, as one would expect, have the title company on notice of this and have them available to assist us if necessary.
That's, of course, Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. And we're talking with them this afternoon on the issue of title insurance. Wes, we talked about this a while back in this particular case. The property was deeded in a trust, but as Cecil mentioned a moment ago, there was a fraudulent effort to, I guess, renotice, if you will, the property as a deed under the person that lived on the property. So where is that case now?
Right. So we're still moving forward with that. Can't get into too much detail about it. I mean, it's a completely civil case. We're not using any names here.
Right.
It's not a criminal case. Yet, I guess it could be, but we're dealing with the civil part of it first. But the case is, you know, as we indicated before, my initial analysis of the case was that since the individual who's owned the property for years but has probably 2 or 3, maybe 4 years ago, conveyed the property into a trust, since you know, she now being an elderly individual who was being taken advantage of by someone from out of town, she didn't know, it was a very unusual situation. She purportedly signed this deed in her individual name, and the property was in a trust. So the initial analysis, and I think a correct analysis
right.
of that, was that did not operate to convey the real property at all. We did reach out to title insurance, and I think that's, you know, this case is one of the things that prompted this conversation. And their recommendation was, you know, don't let this lie, because, you know, you could have a much bigger problem with it, especially if they sell the property to what we referred to on the program a couple of weeks ago as a BFP, a bona fide purchaser.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that will be someone who didn't know about the problem with the title, who paid valuable consideration for the property. And then, you know, your claim wouldn't be about the title so much. It would be more about the it would be about the money that was received for the purchase. You have to go after that money, which may be very difficult to collect, you know, from someone out of state.
Okay, here's a quick question for you, Wes.
Yep.
A bona fide purchaser. If somebody's looking to purchase the property, in the process of their purchase of the property, would their attorney be able to identify that there might be fraud in this case, or is it such because there is a legitimate deed questionable? Is that something that the would stop the attorney looking any further beyond the deed? For example, that there might be a trust behind that deed or another document.
Yeah, I think that the closing attorney should, if he or she is doing her proper due diligence, would identify that there's a problem with the deed conveying the property to the people who are selling it.
Right.
Because they would see that the previous deed to the property indicates it's held in a trust,
mm-hmm.
and then they would see that the signature
right.
of the deed to the people who are selling it, the fraudster, so to speak, doesn't indicate that it was conveyed by the trustee.
Right.
Now, but I can tell you that that would be the type of thing that a closing attorney could miss.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to look, you know, we knew where to look with regard to that because we were very concerned with why she would have signed this and
right.
what the circumstances were, and we were familiar with the trust because we prepared it. We knew about how it worked. We knew that was in the chain of title. So, you know, it was obvious to us. We have in front of us this deed. We have in our file that has the previous deeds. So we knew exactly where to look. Well, looking at a complete chain of title for a closing attorney, you know, without really any notice that this potentially could be a fraud,
mm-hmm.
that would be the type of thing that potentially could, you know, end up being missed, and therefore there could be a certification of title by the closing attorney that's then given to the
right.
title insurance company. And then later on, it could come up, and then title insurance would then be in the middle of it, and then they probably would, you know, seek some seek recovery.
Another permutation on those facts, you know, Lockwood, could be that, you know, a bona fide purchaser just turns to keep in mind the fraudulent person who got the deed, conveyed the deed from the elder woman, you know, is clearly out for some money out of
right,
this.
Right.
They don't have clean hands. Let's
right.
leave it at that.
Yeah.
So suppose they go and find someone who just will pay them $200,000
uh-huh.
for, you know, this property.
Yep.
It's worth more than that. But
right.
to get a good chunk of change out of
uh-huh.
it and scoot on off back to the Bahamas or
right.
over to wherever they're from, okay? Well, the bottom line is that person might not have the title search conducted. They might just give, you know, certified funds for $200,000 in exchange for a deed. That's not a smart thing to do. That's not abiding by the principles of caveat emptor. But they could, under those circumstances, be defined as a bona fide purchaser. This is why, in this file, Wes and I, we hastened to put on record what is known as a les pendens. And we did this very, very promptly, almost immediately upon knowing about these facts. And so, Wes, real quickly, tell our listeners what we did to further assure our client in this file.
Right. So, you know, once we get the recommendation from the title insurance that we need to resolve this with a lawsuit, which, I mean, obviously we knew that was the remedy. We
mm-hmm.
were really hoping to avoid the expense of that, you know, with our client if we could. But, you know, once the title insurance says that's what you need to do, then obviously that's the right thing to do to clean this up. So, you know, it takes maybe a week or something like that in the flow of everything we have going on in order to get the complaint in proper form and get the summons in form and get everything out the door and filed properly. So we could more quickly put in place a les pendens, which we did, which is a notice of pending lawsuit, and get that out within, you know, a day or very short period of time, maybe even the same day. That's more of like a two-page document, maybe three-page document. And what that does is that once you file that in the courthouse where the property is located, then anyone purchasing the property, even if they don't know anything about this potential fraud, is going to be on record notice. They're going to be on notice. So they're not going to be treated as a bona fide purchaser for value. They're not going to be, their title in the property that they purchased would be subject to the recovery by us.
Right.
Okay. And then they would. Then they would have a claim against whoever they paid the money to, you know, based on the fraud. So we would have removed the problem that our client had and put it in the lap of the person who paid the money. Mm-hmm. Now it's their problem to go deal with. That's fine. We've gotten our title straight. You know, we're working on that, but we've gotten our title straight. We're not damaged anymore. Their problem is now their problem. But if we kind of dropped the ball and didn't do the Liz Pendens, then we could potentially not create but expose our client to some liability that we could pretty easily avoid.
As we're wrapping it up with you, Cecil and Wes, and that was Wes Collins, I apologize, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Wes, real quick question. In light of the fact that the damage could have occurred, in other words, the property could have been purchased by a bona fide purchaser, would the title insurance step in and protect the property owner, in this case, the estate?
Well, it depends on the circumstances. Like okay. Cecil said, if there's not an actual closing that takes place, but it's more of, okay, I'm going to wire you the money,
right,
and you're going to just convey the title to me, it's like deed for dollars, mm-hmm. and not a real closing, then there would be no title insurance.
Right.
Okay, that buyer wouldn't have title insurance there. You know, as far as title insurance that our client would have, I don't see any way that would come into play because she did sign the deed. So, you know, although it may be fraudulent and it wasn't signed in the proper form because she didn't sign as trustee, no, I don't think title insurance would. And plus, we're not defending anything.
Mm-hmm.
We brought a lawsuit as the plaintiff to correct what we saw was a problem at the title. And normally, insurance is not going to prosecute cases for folks. They're going to defend against claims that they have to defend.
All right. That's Wes Collins of Harvell & Collins. Since we were just talking about items here, and I think there's another story I'd like to talk about at another time. This issue of title insurance, and as remind you, HarvellandCollins.com is the website. And don't hesitate if you're looking to purchase property or transfer assets, or for that matter, establish valuable estate planning. I would strongly recommend Harvell and Collins, and that is HarvellandCollins.com, or give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050. And with that, Cecil, Wes, thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Lockwood.